What's up, everybody? How you doing? And welcome back to another episode of Living Life Intently. I'm your host, Lee Frazier, and I want to send a huge thank you to everybody who reached out after the last episode with Jonathan. Man, oh man, people reached out, people loved it. And I actually got a review from a friend of mine that said it sounded like a real podcast. So I guess that's a huge compliment. Thanks to everybody who downloaded, listened, and thank you to all the new subscribers and old subscribers, of course. If you like these podcasts, please head over to iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts, put a rating on there. And if you can, just a little bit of a review, because it really does help out when populating in searches and on people's feeds. This week, I sat down with my good friend, Sean McMullen, who is a father, photographer, and now underwater explorer, aka treasure hunter. His wife, if you've listened to previous episodes, was on this podcast. Her name's Ruth McMullen, and she has a great podcast called Optimistically Depressed. Head over to iTunes and search for that. But Sean and I actually sat down to talk about his journey into quitting alcohol. And I know this is the second week we've kind of touched on this subject a little bit. This is in a kind of different angle, but it kind of just happened that way because of scheduling conflicts with other guests last week. So Sean is next up on the docket. And I was just really interested in finding out, you know, why he decided to quit drinking and how he really managed to hold on to that sobriety for like a year. Because if any of you listening know what it's like to try quit drinking for a little while, just like a week, month, 3 months, whatever, especially with the drinking culture here in Atlantic Canada, it's really, really hard. So that really interested me. And in his sobriety, he was able to explore different areas, and kind of kick up habits that he had, or habits or hobbies or whatever you want to call it, that he had from when he was a kid, which then ended up with him, starting a new YouTube channel called Saltwater Sean, where he jumps in the water and searches for whatever. And he's found some amazing things, from old clay pipes to, you know, 200 year old pop bottles that were made in Halifax, which were absolutely cool as shit, by the way, and tons of other things. But I'm not going to talk too much longer. We're just going to jump right into it. If you want to follow Sean, it's at Saltwater Sean on Instagram and YouTube. We will put a link in the bio of this, or the description of this podcast. Follow us, Live Life Intense, or at Live Life Intense on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Even though I don't really use Twitter, but I'm on there. Or follow my personal account at Lee Frazier Official on Instagram. And again, please, if you like this, slap a rating on there, do a little review, whatever. I really appreciate any help in that department. I don't know. Why did I do that? I don't know why I just said it like that, but, oh man. Anyways, we're just going to jump right into this podcast. Hope you guys enjoy. See you next week. Peace.
Hello.
Oh, yeah, you're good.
All right.
So here we are. We are in, man, where are we at? Fall Harbor? Fall River.
Fall River.
Yeah. I'm sitting here with my good friend, Sean McMullen.
Hey, man.
Whose wife, Ruth, did this podcast last season, a year ago, and I've been on hers back and forth over the last year. But yeah, well, let's set it up, man. I'll let you introduce yourself, and then we'll get right into it.
My name's Sean McMullen. I'm from Halifax. Been living here now my whole life, except for a couple of years staying in Ontario. Have three kids, and I'm a photographer. I work for a company called Viewpoint full time, and I'm also a treasure hunter explorer now.
There we go.
On my spare time. And I gave up drinking.
Yeah. So that's kind of like one of the things. And it's funny because I just mentioned to you that, like, last week we talked to a friend of mine who also gave up drink, but he also gave up all kinds of other substances as well. But, and it's, you know, it was just happened that this is going to be the next episode, because I was thinking of that on the way up. I'm like, oh, two back to back talking about kind of the same topic, sure, a different angle of it. But yeah, I did have other guests supposed to be recorded, because this is like a week late. Yep. But there's a lot of stuff that happened, so I skipped kind of a week to get caught up. But yeah, I just wanted to sit down and kind of pick your brain about the decision. I know that we've kind of briefly talked about it, but pick your brain about the decision of, you know, why you decided to kind of go sober. And was it like, was it like just a short term goal? I guess we'll just jump right into the meat and potatoes.
Sure.
Was it like a short term goal to do that you just expanded on, or was it like, I'm just going to quit?
No, it had I had tried and failed several times to quit drinking. I'd gone 30 days here, 60 days here. And then the last time I really failed, I was actually, we were in New York City, Ruth and I, with our friend Adam, Adam Arkins.
Okay.
And we were at a party of a friend's and I drank too much and I made an ass of myself. And the next morning I was just like, why am I doing this to myself?
Yeah.
And I just like, it's not who I am. I said things and did things. I was like, that doesn't align with who I am. And then it also triggered a ton of anxiety for me. Cause I already have kind of a general anxiety disorder. So alcohol doesn't really help with that. So then I went through November and December, just like, all right, I'm done. And I would a week later I'd do it again. And it's like, why do I keep failing?
Yeah.
Then I got to a point in January, 2020, where I was like, I had a talk with my friend whose house I was at that night that I, just got wasted. And I was like, he was like, asked me a really simple question. He's like, what aligns with your goals? Just ask yourself that. And if drinking doesn't do it, mm-hmm. then you know what to do. Yeah. That was it. It was like super simple. And I was like, huh, okay. Drinking doesn't contribute to what I want to become or what I want to do with my life.
Yeah.
I was kind of lost at that point. It's been a year now later and I feel more focused and I'll get to that later. But I got to the point where it's like, okay, I actually have a reason to continue to not drink.
Yeah.
Before I was just like doing it because I just thought I'll just do it. But because I had nothing to propel me to keep my focus, I just kept failing.
Yeah. You kind of have to I thought about this when I quit smoking weed when I was like 16 is when I quit. So it was like, I'm not saying I quit totally like I do once in a while,
sure.
But for the most part back then it was like every day, every morning, multiple times a day, like constantly.
Yeah.
And that had been going on since I was probably like 13 maybe. Mm-hmm. So when I quit and I finally came to the realization, it was nothing like making an ass of myself. It was more or less like reprogramming my brain into, you know, what I wanted to do. And like, this is not really who... It's kind of bringing, it was fun at the time and it was fun to do an experience, but it's not really who I am anymore. And I want to kind of move away from that.
Yep.
And you know, it wasn't kind of like a hard stop, but I mean, over time I might eat an edible here and there. I might take some spray here and there. And that's mostly you know, that's mostly because if I'm hungover, I just take the spray.
Sure.
And
put it sure.
But
yeah.
But that was kind of like the whole thing. That's how I kind of look at it because I've gone trips, or not trips, but I've gone like stints, like 3 months, 4 months. Mm. Like when we started Live Life Intense, that was mostly because of budget. And then that was the first reason was budget wise why I quit. And then secondary was the fact that I needed to work like all day, every day to get everything open and running. If I'm taking time off my work that was actually making me money and taking the switch and jumping into this, I need to focus and I can't have that in my life. So, that was the reasoning. And then you just fall back into old things. But now I'm trying to, which is kind of like one of the reasons why I was wanting to chat with you about it, because you've successfully done it because you wanted to, whereas Jonathan was kind of forced to, but then enjoys his life now. But so that was kind of like the premise of like why, because now I'm trying to figure out like change my relationship with alcohol from, you know, every summer I drink quite a bit, like every night, you know, I get back, there's people partying, camping, whatever, and you know, have drinks with people, but trying to reprogram my brain, to avoid drinking copious amounts, because even last night, having a few casual beers this morning, I was like, my whole schedule.
Yeah.
It's like, fuck it. I'll just sleep in a bit and then I'll drive to Halifax.
So right.
My morning workout didn't get done.
Yeah.
So now I got to do it.
Yeah. I get that, man. And like at that point in my life, like I was heavier too. Like I've probably lost like 20 pounds as well. That's not why I quit though. Not to lose weight. It wasn't, it was just because I didn't like that person, that version of Sean when I drank. It's like, and I thought I was like enlightened when I drank, you know, alcohol makes you feel like you're just like deeper with people. And it's just like, really, you're just like, you're not really saying anything. That's what I found is like all these things part, like we've been together when I've drank and like, it's just like at the time it's like, yeah, it's been a lot of fun. And then the next day I'm like, I don't remember anything.
Yeah,
and it's like, and I feel sick. And it's just like, why am I giving days of my life to that?
Yeah.
So exactly. I was like, I was done. And when I quit, I had a couple of even close friends. I'm like still friends with them now, but they were like, well, let's go to a party. And I was like, yeah, I'm not going to drink. He's like, well, you're not going to be any fun. And I was like, it hurt. Cause like, so you're saying like, I need alcohol to have a good, to have a good time. This was like in the pre-pandemic, and then the pandemic hit. And honestly, the pandemic made it easier for me to stay sober because I couldn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
And, but I wasn't like depressed being at home. I just enjoyed the milestones of getting over 1 month, 2 months, 3 months. And then once I, I'll back up just a little bit. We went to a house party for our friend, my friend, Matt, and everyone was drinking that night. And there was like 20 people there and I had club soda with me and I made it through that party. And everyone was kept offering me drinks and trying to get me to like break my sobriety. And it's like, no, I'm good. I'm good. And then when I got past that night and woke up the next morning, I knew I could do it for the rest of the
year.
Yeah. Like I had to get past that peer pressure of my friends. And as the time went on, I kind of just realized like the drinking culture in the Maritimes is very strong.
Yes.
And I never wanted to be a preacher. Like this is what worked for me. People can continue to drink and I'm never going to say you should stop because you're making, you know, your life miserable. Cause for some people, alcohol, they can moderate it and they can, that's fine. I never wanted to be like a guy who's like, you should really quit. This is bad for you. I mean, it's alcohol probably is bad for everyone, but it's not my decision. It's not, you know, my right to tell them to do that. Right. It's just like, it worked for me. So as the year went on, I started getting more and more healthy. I started losing weight. And then I also started like getting like mental clarity. Like I started just feeling like more aware, more focused on anything I was doing. And all of a sudden I started to go snorkeling. I was like, I'm just going to go snorkeling or look for treasure or get in the water. It's something I haven't done since I was a teen. So I did that and I had an awesome time. And I was like, I'm going to do this again. And then that kind of morphed and blew up into this treasure hunting side quest.
Which, that's pretty cool.
My life. And it's like, and it honestly came out of this like not drinking mentality. Whereas Friday nights or I'd hang out with friends, I'd go to a bar, go to have people over to our house and we'd drink. And then Saturday I'd be a write off and Sunday I'd just be like lazy. And now it's like, I'm not giving any more time of my life to do anything like that. And I was up in Cape Breton in the summer and in the fall and everyone was drinking. And I was like, I just enjoyed the sobriety and drinking non-alcoholic beer and still having that social aspect was fun with people. Cause there is something about having a drink with some, with of some type with people.
Yes.
But as long as it wasn't alcohol for me, it helped me get through that. And, I don't know. I just giving it up. It's like, why didn't I do it sooner? Like, you know, it's like, I've been doing it for so long since I was 19 years old. Like I came from a family where we like pretty strong Christian household. We didn't drink. Like there was like no drinking, no drugs. My parents kept me out of parties in high school. Man. Like all, so I grew up not repressed, but that was just how it was.
Yep.
And I do actually thank my parents for that because I probably would have done a lot of stupid shit back then too. Yeah. And
trust me, I've been there.
Yeah. But then I started drinking when I was 19 and then I drank, you know, fairly consistently for a long time. And it's like, just did a lot of stupid stuff in my 20s. Even as a dad, it's just like, I would like sleep at a friend's house and come home and my Ruth would be with our daughter Zoe. And I was just like, cause I wouldn't drink and drive. And then it's just like, it was bad. Even back when I was like 24, 25, I was like, why am I doing this?
Yeah.
Was I getting out something that I missed? So I just always had an unhealthy like relationship with alcohol and it is addictive. So I kept doing it.
I know. Yeah. Yeah. Right? It's like this little monster. So I was thinking of that last night. So I brought over purposely, made a friend last night and, and so I brought over like I bought a six pack just from myself and Allie to enjoy with Friday night, whatever, to hang out, have some drinks. Which what I'm doing now is buying like the six pack of Klein and Tides, which are great. And then I buy like two cases of this bubbly because I absolutely love bubbly.
Yeah.
So I brought over four. I was like, I'll bring over for them and like, you know, whatever. And you know, him and his girlfriend and we sat down but like I get one and I down the first one.
Sure.
Cause they're so good. And then, I'm on my second one and then that little monster, it's kind of like, and for people that don't understand what I'm talking about, if you ever see this movie, Frank, what was it? Not Frankie Got Fingered. That's, That's what's his name?
Tom Green.
Tom Green. It's a DJ movie. It's All Gone, Pete Tong.
Okay.
So it's about like a DJ loses his hearing.
Yep.
So, but he has a major coke addiction. And so, but they represent that in the movie as this coke badger. And it's just like badger with this all white. Like
right.
Yep. So every time he's trying to kick it,
yep.
You just hear the coke badger and he's chases him down and forces him to do it. Like that's kind of like how I reference it to people. Like it's this little monster that comes up.
Yeah.
And it's like, hey, you should have another one. You should have another. That is the kind of, for me, because once I get on a roll,
yeah.
Especially if I'm being social,
yep.
In a social setting.
Sure.
And then all that being like hammered that we talked about, like the alcohol, like the culture here, the drinking culture, that just kicks right in. And then my mind's like, oh, I only have one more left. Yeah. Co-op's still open.
I know. So you go get more. And it's like, I always like, even when I was drinking, I was like, what am I chasing? What feeling do I want? And how come I can't get it when I'm not drinking? It's like, okay, there's a problem there. There's something that I feel alcohol can only solve, like this like level of understanding or insight that I obviously can't get to if I'm sober. And so I started thinking about that. Like I was even times when I've been up at Live Life Intense, like for fall getaways. And some of the nights that I've hung out with the boys and girls, it was just like one night everyone was in the can and I was just like laying there and just like, it's like, why am I trying to get to this point that I'm just like, what is it about this that I want so badly? Because it's not really rewarding.
No,
it's fleeting and it makes you sick. And it's just like, so when I got to my breaking point and when I finally hit like not rock bottom, but just like the lowest of the low of feeling like crap, I was like, okay, this really has to be taken on and seriously, because like I can't be hung over with my kids around.
Yeah.
I don't want to be that dad. And I don't like that version of myself, like I said earlier.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Again, like what aligns with my goals? If I want to become, you know, a mountain climber, I was supposed to go mountain climbing last year, but then the pandemic hit. So I quit alcohol. That helped me. That goal gave me focus. Then that fell away because I couldn't fly to the United States.
Okay, yeah.
So then I was like, well, I'm going to get in the water. And then I just...
So has that kind of filled... So I guess that habit been... That the new habit that has filled the void of the old habit?
Yeah. I'm like, I have an addictive personality. So whatever I get into, I just dive fully into it. I just can't help myself.
Yeah, I know.
That's who I am. And as I know, that's who you are too. So, but if I'm contributing to like the greater good of both my own health and like the world or what's going on, then that's a win. So I just took that addictive personality of drinking to, I'm just going to keep getting in the water after work, or I'm going to leave at lunchtime at my work and go in the ocean.
So you do it whenever, you don't have a set schedule. You just go whenever.
No set schedule. I'm just like,
you have a go bag in the back of your car.
Yeah. I check the tides. I'm like, oh, it's low. Or I check the water temps of the ocean and I'm like, I'm out, I'm going. So I was in on Sunday. It was like 4 degrees Celsius.
So what are you using for a wetsuit?
7mm now. Torpedo Rays gave me one.
Yeah. Sponsored by Torpedo Rays.
I was wearing 3mm up until December 15th.
I've got a nice like 7mm Kevlar dry suit that I wore once. It cost me like $3,000 to buy. And then I got to a job and we were doing something nasty. I think we're still doing like underwater painting. Which was like
underwater painting.
You know, it was a joke that when I got into diving, people would be like, hey, go get the guy. And you know, it's like, you know, bucket of steam, like ask people, go get a bucket of steam and shit like that. Right. And, they're like, oh, you're going to do underwater painting today. And you get the guys, young guys that are all like keen. They're like, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Anyways, it is a thing. It was a two part epoxy kind of like resin. And we did two different campaigns, like two different years. And then finally they figured out the mixture that would work offshore Newfoundland. And so we were underneath a FPSO, which is a floating platform.
Yeah. So why do you paint underwater? For visibility of other things to see?
No, this was because the FPSO, Transport Canada required them to do some work on, so there was like some erosion happening on the bottom of this FPSO, which is looks like a big tanker. It's like an offshore, basically platform, production platform. And, they had like a water outflow for like coolant or whatever. And around that thing, the hull was starting to like erode, so it would, like that section would, you know, then flood and whatever. So we had to go strip it, like basically buff it all off do thickness tests to find out where the weak areas were, mark a big spot, and then with like little like paint markers, and then get underneath there and like prime it.
Okay.
And then fucking.
How long would you be under doing that?
We were doing probably, I don't even know, man. We were doing one, because when they were, the way they were setting the paint down, it was on the FPSO. We were on a little dive boat that attached like to the side of the boat.
Yep.
And under the hull was probably like 60 feet. And so when we went down, we would do until the end of like the paint, because they'd send these, this hose down over the side with like what looked like a pressure washer gun, but it had a brush end.
Fascinating.
And you just, that's so cool. You just hold it, and then it slowly, like, it was the worst, boring, most boring thing that I've ever had to do in my life, because they had one gun, two guys in the water, and I have video of this, and like you pull the nozzle, and this paint would just like, it was slow to come out. And they're like, I remember being in the water, and they gave us an orientation on how to paint. And like literally sitting in a classroom, and they're like, this is how we did a test and tank in St. John's, Newfoundland. And you do clockwise motions, and you do it in this sort of speed. So it has the perfect spread, like it's like the perfect motion for spreading it around in that temperature water and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And so I'm in the water, and I'm like, got these magnets on the bottom of the boat, and like you're in rock climbing gear, like the harness, and I'm just hanging there.
Yep.
And I didn't wear this dry suit, so I'm wearing like a company suit, so all the seals are stretched. So what I do, because the neoprene compresses when you go down 60 feet, so I would put my gloves on, but wait till I got down, take a roll of duct tape, and then get the guy in the water to duct tape the shit out of my seals so that it would compress, so that I wouldn't lose, like the air wouldn't be squirting out in a dry suit, and I could stay somewhat buoyant.
Yep.
And so anyways, I'm sitting there. One guy's got the gun. The other guy has a brush. I'm not kid you not. It's like a tiny round brush. And I would squirt out a little bit. He would dab it and then paint it onto the baka. So there's two of us there until that batch ran through the pipe. We ran out. So we'd be down there. You know, it'd be probably a half hour, 40 minutes, something like that. And then by that time, you're freezing because you're not moving.
Yeah.
And it's like sitting there in the water. And it's the most boring. Like you're talking weeks. Weeks of this shit.
Oh my gosh. Like
weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks. And it was
actually sounds miserable.
It was interesting. We had a good laugh because, but that year was all doing this painting bullshit and, and then like inspection, weld inspection and stuff. But, it was pretty crazy. But anyways, underwater painting is
fascinating. I've never done anything that boring yet.
I know, but what is like you've done. Did you used to do this as a kid or?
So I snorkeled and I always like loved searching for stuff. As a kid.
Yeah.
I've looked for bottles with friends on camping trips, looked in lakes. And then I think I got in during the pandemic, I started watching magnet fishing videos. You ever seen these guys?
No.
Just go on YouTube.
So they have like a magnet on like a fishing rod?
They have a magnet on a giant like nylon rope and it's like 60 feet long and they cast the pull of the magnets can be 800 pounds, 1200 pounds. And they just like, honestly, after the podcast, I'll show you one. Just they throw it into the ocean or lake and they pull out knives, guns. There's guys all over that are doing this, and it's awesome.
Crazy. Yeah. Jesus.
Yeah. So I got into magnet fishing, so I bought a magnet. Then I lost it. It got stuck in between two rocks. And I was like, all right, I'm going to do something else. So I got a wetsuit, and I just started getting in the water and just looking for stuff. I think my first time out was in Northwest Arm, found a bottle. I was like, this is cool. Then I started going, and I made a video, put it up on Instagram, and people were like, oh, this is really cool. And then I started watching more treasure hunters do, and I was watching what they were doing. And then I started kind of copying some of the stuff that they were doing.
Yeah.
Then it kind of blew up. CTV News came and did a story on me and my dad, and then CBC News did. So it sent a whole bunch of people to all my channels, including YouTube, which I'm trying to grow to make money. I'm almost at 1,000 subscribers. I'm at 880. Apparently, when you get to 1,000 subscribers and a certain amount of watch time, you can monetize all your videos, new and past,
with the ads that they
sent. They'll give you ads and then you make money off it. So I'm actually trying to get to 1,000 to be able to.
And what do you have right now?
880.
Oh man.
Yeah, and it's hard to get YouTube subscribers. That's in 6 months of just starting.
I've noticed that through different accounts from like locals here, Dave and Skyler, and like everybody that's been really pushing YouTube. It's very hard to try to get.
It's the hardest medium I've ever been in. However, I've met and I'm now friends with tons of treasure hunters globally, including some big ones. A big guy from the States who has like 4.3 million subscribers, he found me and subscribed to what I'm doing. It's like really cool. And they're all, and it's all like, and I comment and I really engage on that platform.
Yeah.
It's, I don't know, it's just something I find interesting. You see people digging, or they're like doing archaeological stuff. And like, I find it all fascinating. I've always liked archaeology too. So, but like, yeah, the whole not drinking, kind of just removing something from my life. Like you said, it opened up me to other things.
Yeah.
And treasure hunting, underwater exploring, just that became the thing.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah,
and I lost the weight too, and I just like, I feel just healthier. I'm still battling, like I have rheumatoid arthritis, so I have an autoimmune disease, which like cripples my joints. So
does the water help? The cold water?
Yeah, the cold water does help. But I just went through one over Christmas where it basically, you can't see because it's an audio podcast, but basically my hands got crimped up and extremely painful, and then it kind of went away. So I will be dealing with that for my life, but I'm not depressed about it. Like I've had it for, I was diagnosed 2 years ago, and honestly, I probably started drinking more because of it, because it's getting diagnosed with an autoimmune is pretty depressing.
And then drinking really doesn't help your immune
system. Yeah, alcohol and sugar, right?
Bad. Jesus Christ. Yeah.
So yeah, that's where I'm at now. And yeah, that's kind of been like a really short version of it, but I'm really happy that, like, I have no desire to drink ever again. Like I haven't even had marijuana in also a year. I didn't really publicize that, but I was doing spray, and I tried everything once it became legal.
Yeah.
And I gave that up too.
Like, did you notice like a time, like was there kind of like a window of time from deciding not to drink?
Yep.
You definitely have like your brain fights you, and it's like, hey, why don't you just grab a drink, blah, 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 whatever. But did you have, you notice like a certain point, like a certain time period where it was like, I'm not actually thinking about that anymore.
Yeah. It actually took 6 months.
Oh, really?
Because I actually wanted, that's the whole thing. I wanted to drink up until, I started January 5th, up until June. Like I wanted it. That was, and I was like, and then eventually the desire just like slipped away.
Crazy.
Like, and now it's like, and now it's,
there you go.
Yeah. Perfect. And the desire slipped away, and now I have like zero desire.
Yeah. It takes like
I don't even know if I want to drink again, like for the rest of my life, because like, why would I want to go back to that person that I was? Like, it doesn't even, I have no interest.
Yeah.
Right. And some people are like, oh, we'll never have a drink again, Sean. It's like, well, you can hang out with me.
Exactly.
Like we can hang out and we can still have a ton of fun.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm not going to be less crazy than I was. It's just like, I don't know. I'm just going to be healthier.
Yeah. I've been over this last, I think since I got back from BC, which was right before Christmas, that was kind of like, you know, I started looking at it again, and especially over Christmas, like over Christmas was a little bit gluttonous when it came to like booze,
sure,
like it always is for everybody. But I just felt like shit.
Yeah.
I did, like, first time I ever actually gained some serious weight.
Okay.
And for those of you that are like, yeah, Lee, you gain weight. Yeah, fuck off. But I noticed it. And that wasn't really the decision. It was more or less like the feeling. Mm. And I didn't feel focused. I didn't feel I basically felt lazy as shit. And I just felt gross.
Right.
And so then I started just slowly getting back into fitness stuff. I use more. I've got this routine that I do every day. Mm-hmm. And I've been doing it since then, basically, which was like just doing this round of burpees every day.
Yeah.
So I try to do it in the morning. First thing, which I said I didn't do this morning because I was like laying there in bed. I'm like, fuck it. I want to do it right now. I'll do it later.
Yeah.
But now I'm thinking about, I'm like, fuck, now I got to squeeze this in between like going to do all this shit today.
And
like, God damn, I should have done it this morning. But I use that if ever I feel the urge, like, hey, I'm just going to stop at the co-op or grocery store or whatever, liquor store, get some booze.
Yep.
I literally just drop down and do like 50 burpees.
Dude, that's
awesome.
And then
after that, I'm like, I don't want to drink. Yeah. I don't want to do shit.
Oh man, that, now that you say that, the exercise component, that reminds me, when I did quit, on the 5th of January, because I was focused on training for Mount Baker out in Washington State, I needed to get my ass in shape because I was heavier. I wasn't in as good, physical place as I should have been. So I went to Fit for Less every day for 2 months. I had never been to the gym that much ever in my life. And I kept a spreadsheet in Google spreadsheets showing my progress. And I did weight training and Stairmaster, Stairstepper at the gym. Yep. And I was the only guy who ever used it at the gym. Every time I went there, no one ever used this machine. Maybe, I don't know why. I don't know. Cause I needed something that I could basically train my legs to climb constantly. Mm-hmm. So I started out at like 15 minutes, 20, 25, 30, 35, 40. And I kept making the speed faster and faster until I got to a point where I was like doing probably 8,000 steps in an hour, like up.
Yeah.
And it was like, I was burning like 1,000 calories and I was just, I was conditioning for 2 months. Then the pandemic hit and I was like, I can't go out west. So I stopped. And then but I still wasn't drinking at that point. Mm-hmm. I don't even know what I did. I don't even remember the month of February last year, or even, I just remember the pandemic hitting. And I think Ruth and I made TikTok videos.
Maybe. Well, really? Ooh, I jumped into that platform.
Yeah. For like a month. And then we got out of that, but I needed, like, it's funny. I quit it. So I needed something. So I got addicted to going to the gym.
Yeah.
Then I had a period of time where I was doing stupid internet shit. And then, my daughter's birthday, I remember April. And then we had the mass shooting. And that,
oh my God.
Yeah. Wow. Like, so all these things kind of started taking my attention, but I still wasn't really doing it. Oh, I completely raked and cleaned all of the property behind my house in Bedford that used to be an old school. Like, I cleaned it all every day. That's what I did. So that became something that I did. Mm-hmm. I just got addicted to, I created paths. I blazed trails. I did that for like 2 months and then it got warm and then I got in the water. Then I've been there ever since. And I kind of like found that passion, like the passion came, it was like always in me. And this is something I really like doing. And I would have done it without even sharing it online. Like, I just loved it.
Yep.
And then the fact that people responded to it, that's just gravy. But
so what is like the you were showing me some stuff before, yeah. But what is this like the creme de la creme of the stuff?
No,
you have?
That's like second tier. Like, yeah. The really cool stuff is downstairs in my office. Like, bottles from, I have a bottle from like the 1850s that is like handmade. It's like so freaking cool.
Crazy.
And then and then I have old clay pipes I'll show you after too.
I saw some of those online. Yeah.
You should hold them. They're insane. Like, one is from like at least the late 1700s. Like, that is old. And I actually wonder if they could go to a museum. Like, I love to see that stuff in a museum. I haven't found any gold yet. Even if I did, I wouldn't tell you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We're talking about that as well. Yeah. About some stuff around Cabrin. Yeah.
And now I'm actually getting my training to become a scuba diver so I can actually stay underwater, not hold my breath.
There we go.
And actually explore wrecks and explore sites that I know that there's stuff. Because I feel like I have a keen eye. Like, I found all this stuff holding my breath. And my dad, who's a diver, he's like, that's amazing. Like, so I love it. It's all I think about. I've researched it and I want to keep doing it.
So when are you doing this diving course?
I'm doing it online right now. I paid the 400, I think it's like $430.
Is that what it is?
Yeah. To get it done. So now I'm halfway through the academy part and they're doing like knowledge tests, quizzes. I have to pass that. And then when I'm done that, I do my open water cert. So.
And where do they do it? In Halifax?
In Bedford Basin. Yeah.
I've been in the bottom of that place.
Yeah. Tell me, I'm kind of curious. What have you found? Do you have anything that in your house that you've picked up on your dives?
No, I've never done any. So I shouldn't say that. I've done like a handful of like wreck dives.
Okay.
And then when I say wreck, not wreck, like not like a shipwreck, but recreational dives. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Cause primarily it's all been offshore. Right. I haven't really found that much crazy shit, to be honest with you. Cause I never really looked. Just did some stuff out here. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I don't. That's the thing. It's like, I was thinking about it the other day. I have no real pictures of like my, I have like pictures of like in like random video of different places I've been.
Yep.
But I don't have anything of like,
well, we should do it when I'm done. I want to remember that place I was trying to convince you to go.
So that is in this book.
Okay.
That I was telling you about, the shipwreck.
And you laughed because I was like, we could swim out to it. And you were like, it's 2 kilometers. Yeah. So we need a boat.
Did you ever try swim 2 kilometers? It sucks.
No, not in my full suit. I haven't either.
Dude, so. It's like the worst thing.
So we'd be exhausted probably. Oh, drowning, man, by the time we get there.
But it all depends if you had like, if you're,
I'm pretty fit. I mean, I'm doing it. I'm in the water twice a week.
2 kilometers.
Like, that's a long time.
Floating in like a PFD or whatever.
Sure.
Plus that's another thing. I kind of forgot about all that. This is a funny story, right? So, okay. To digress from your story a little bit, one of the only wreck dives that I've ever done was here in Halifax. Mm-hmm. And the other ones have been down in like Honduras and stuff. And that has been like, you know,
yep.
Not the safest conditions. We're just like a couple of drinks. Like,
you've told me a few stories.
Yeah. So anyways, we did this trip and this is not a safe condition either. But anyways, my friend calls me and he's like, yeah, my wife's gone. Now you want to do some diving? He's just done his diving certificate, right? Okay. So he goes, go to Torpedo Rays, rent some gear. I'm like, cool. Went down, got some couple sets of tanks, drove out Purcell's Cove, where he was at in Duncan's Cove.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we go out in the water and we get out and, you know, we do a little trip out in the cove and messing around. We get back in and we set all the gear down. We go in the house, fire up the barbecue and have a couple of drinks. And then we go back out. And so for me, my habit is, and this is, my habit is that a lot of things is already done. So when I'm diving, I just don't think about things.
Okay.
It's like I check here and there, but primarily
check your BFD and all
we're fed by gas from surface. The tank on our back is just like the very, so if everything else fails and the ship sinks, you have this tank on your back basically.
Yep.
So anyways, I grab a tank and I thought it was like the new tank. Anyways, the old tank. And so I never use I have like a contents gauge, but I don't know what the computer does. They send us like a little mini computer. It has like a beep, like a low PSI beep. So we're in the water and we're like swimming and I hear beep, 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 beep. I'm like, what the fuck is beeping? What does Trevor have?
Yeah.
Oh man, he must have like a little watch or something. And I just keep swimming. And then I'm like, oh, it's getting hard to breathe. And I grab the regulator, look at it. It's like 4 PSI. I'm like, oh. And I look back at Trev and I'm like pointing at me. I'm like up. And I completely forgot because I don't ever scuba dive. And
you're supposed to like have 20 reserve PSI.
Oh,
like,
I sucked it dry. But that's how we used to dive in the harbor here in Halifax.
Okay.
Was that we would like if we were on scuba doing a work job, which I have done.
Sure.
You'd be on these set of steel doubles and you'd be wearing this old Aqualung regulator, like the big hose on your shoulder that doesn't have a regulator. And so you just breathe it till it's hard to breathe, and then you start coming to surface, and you get a couple breaths on the way because you're not doing any stops on the way.
Yeah,
because we use a different set of tables. So if you're using now your paddy tables, there's a lot of time. And for people that are like, listen, wonder what I'm talking about.
Yep.
It's scuba dive tables to tell you how long how long you can spend at certain depths, and then whether or not you
going
have to
through
do
that right now,
stops.
Actually. Yep.
So those tables, depth tables, are severely padded with time to allow for a lot of error. So like, say 50 foot depths, you could stay down. I'm trying to remember what the Canadian Navy tables are.
Well, if it's 60 feet, you get like, there's like, they measure it in bars, like 1 bar, 2 bar, 3 bar, 4 bar.
Yeah. So atmospheres. Basically. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting.
What I'm saying.
Yep.
Oh, this bubbly. Pretty good. This podcast brought to you by
Bubbly. Man, can we, you know what? They probably would sponsor you if you keep mentioning them. We'll tag them in it too.
Well, so if you're ever looking to extend your time, look at the Canadian Navy tables. You can download the table online.
Okay.
So it's DCIEM diving tables, and then you can get the US Navy, which is basically the limit. So like the whatever it says. So basically at 50 feet on now your paddy tables. I think it's just all paddy for now, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. So if it's say whatever it's like 30 minutes or 40 minutes. Well, it's double that on the Canadian Navy tables. But they pad it in because there's so many people that'll like, you know, fuck up a lot of times and all that sort of shit. So it's, I would assume that that's what it is. It's padded so that it allows for human error. So if something does happen.
Yeah. It seems like a lot, like they're all this training online. It's just like, there's a lot to remember. And I haven't ever been in water with a tank. I think my dad let me use one in a lake once when I was a kid, but like, it seems like it kind of made me nervous, even though I'm in the water a lot. And the dive people, at the dive shop, are like, oh, this will be no problem for you. But I'm still just like it's just so there's so much stuff to like think about. It's like that's why I was curious about talking to you about when you're under, what's it really like, you know?
It's so different. It's kind of like I'm always concerned when I do any scuba stuff that I'm going to get lost because like I'm always tethered as like. Commercial diving and especially in saturation diving.
Yes.
Like I have a transponder like in sat offshore.
Yep.
I have a transponder that's on me that I show up on the screen in dive control. I show up on the bridge.
Yep.
And like a screen, they know where I'm at. Which is good for orientation when I get lost.
Right.
Like zero visibility. I'm like, where is the crane?
Do you ever
I'm
get
like,
vertigo from
Yeah, dives? I've had it a few times, mostly when water gets in my ears.
Okay.
So if I'm sideways, water gets in my ears, then I get it.
So
and it's really, really weird.
I just experienced that in Prospect in December. I was in the water for about an hour and snorkeling, free diving, and I got water in my ears, this pre-ringing days, and I got out and I like I was completely
out of the water.
Yeah. Once I got out, it was my balance. I mean, it was like 0 degrees. I don't know if that played into it too. Maybe there's some hypothermia, but I remember my balance was completely off. And that's probably from water in the ears.
Yeah.
That's all it takes.
Yeah. So that's what I had to get it gone in my, man, this bubbly again. It's great. It's better to have this than beer and then feeling like shit. I got to go have a whole productive day after this. But yeah, that's what had happened to me. And it was, I can't really remember when, but it did happen to me offshore, even in one of the big helmets, because you always end up getting water in there somehow.
Okay.
And then what was the other time? I think another time was scuba summers. Okay. But it's so, so weird. It might have been even in my course when I was in a pool.
Okay.
Because it's like, it's very, very weird because it's just like everything. You don't even know if you're up or down or sideways. And then it kind of, you have to snap yourself out of it a bit.
But okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's mostly when I put my head sideways or if I'm wearing like, so primarily when I was working, we use these Kirby Morgan, which are the industry standard. They're like a big yellow helmet. And so if you've seen commercial diver pictures, mostly they're usually wearing these helmets. But Kirby Morgan also makes another one called Band Mask, which is the face of the actual helmet, but it's got a neoprene hood on it and it's got holes all through it. So it's a little lighter model. It's usually used for like standby divers that are, you know, that's the guy that's one guy's in the water, one guy's all suited, ready to go. If something happens, he jumps in, saves him basically.
Yep.
So like a lot of companies will use that. So that's got holes in it. So when you're working and there's air pockets and then water gets in.
Maybe that's what's happened to me. And maybe that's what's caused like I probably got an infection because of the ringing in my ear right now, but, that seems to describe kind of what I went through going through.
So. Yeah.
And I know snorkeling, freediving has its own problems because when you're holding your breath and you're diving down and you're coming back up, you could be going down 10 feet and not equalizing. So you come back up and pressure's off. And anyway, enough about it. I'm talking about it because I'm going through that right now.
No, I know, but it's interesting because I'd be like, I was texting you too because I'm buying I put my name on it. My friend's got it in Corner Brook and it's a dive compressor. So he runs a dive company and, he's got it's a big old clunky one. It's probably half the size of this table, to be honest with you. It's massive. It needs new filters. So a year ago, he's like, I got it if you want it.
Okay.
Like, cool. I'll buy it from you.
Yep.
And then, pandemic, couldn't get over Newfoundland. We're going to ship it. And then I just messaged him before Christmas. I'm like, if you still have it, I still want it. And I want it for next year. Cause I'll have at my place, Live Life Dental, I'll have my, buy a whole diving kit, whole diving spread, be able to fill tanks up. And then we go from there,
that's cool.
Which is why I'm reading all these books on
wrecks
around Cape Breton Island, which is like, there's so, so many around Cape Breton Island.
Yeah.
And there's so much gold that has been found there and treasures and all that stuff. And it just, that kind of kicks off this like little thing in your brain. It's like when you're a kid, that's all you're thinking about.
It's a childlike thing to search for treasure. And now I'm doing it as an adult and I just, and I do it alone too. It's like a lot of people you shouldn't go alone, be safe. And I don't know.
Well, when you're like snorkeling, a little less, but when you're like scuba diving,
you need a buddy.
Yeah. Scuba diving's a little bit differently.
Yeah.
Yeah. I got asked to go swim and work on a fish farm kind of off the books by myself. I was like, how deep is it? They're like 120 feet at the bottom. You need to clean some stuff. I'm like, you want me to go swim around nets and scuba gear by myself? No.
Recipe for death.
I am not doing that. They're like, but we'll pay well. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All that bubbly ran straight through me.
So to bring it back to the drinking thing, because I know that some people will probably listen to this podcast and probably wanting to know. So if anybody that is kind of listening to this that maybe would like to do the same thing.
Yeah.
What kind of advice would you give them?
Yeah.
And kind of like an angle to approach to take. Cause I know for me, what worked when I did for like long periods of time was just, taking like, not trying to take a too much of a bite, I guess. Not be like, I'm going to quit it for, a year.
Right.
I'm just going to do it for, this month or the next 2 weeks. And then by the end of that, I was like, okay, well, I'm going to try to do it for another 2 weeks.
Right.
So what kind of advice would you give somebody
a lot of people have asked me that because I've been sharing it as I go with people like the day markers, here and there that I got past. And there's been a lot of response to it. There seems to be a lot of people interested in not drinking, but they're like, I don't know if I could ever do it or how could I do what you're doing? And it really, it comes back to not even like choosing a time period. Well, at least in my experience, that didn't work.
Yeah.
Like I said earlier. So I tried, I was like, I'm going to go for 60 days. And I made it to day 59. and I gave up. And then the failure of that didn't help. Like, I set myself up for failure. So then I was like, okay, well, obviously time, putting time limits on these things doesn't work. And I didn't say I was going to try to quit drinking for a year. I was going to just, or I didn't say I was going to try, I just said I was going to do it. And so I did give myself a time limit or time expiration in this case, but I brought it back to the same question I had to ask myself every day when I started to think about drinking is, is this what you really want to do? That I just ask yourself that question. And if it doesn't, if it's not what you want to do, then good. But if that's what you want to do, sure. So I know every day I had the opportunity to drink, and every day I had the opportunity and I turned it down every single day.
Did you, along the way, did you find, or did you keep a track record, like a visual calendar of the dates? You just kind of went.
I had an app on my phone called Quit That.
Yeah.
It's a free app that I found, and I just started it and I would just check it. I thought it was interesting at first, and I forgot about the app, and over time, I just forgot about time until a month anniversary started happening, and then that really helped. But my wife, Ruth, also was supportive, and my family, that's another thing too. I let all my friends and family know what I was doing, so I didn't feel as alone in it, but I wasn't looking for their validation either. Yeah. I was like, this is just what I'm going to do.
And did you do it initially just kind of like close friends, family, like announce it, and then slowly?
Slowly I started to feel good about it. I was like, well, maybe people might be encouraged by this.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, again, it's like people say, Sean, I don't know if I could do this. And it's like, well, I'm no special, no different than you. You just have to have your priorities in the right place.
Yeah.
It really does come down to that. It's like, does not drinking align with the goals you have? And then sometimes people have goals that they'll get to because they don't drink, or they'll create them, or they'll discover them as they go along. Like in my case, I lucked out with treasure hunting, but it could have been anything. It could have been like guitar lessons or going back to other passions that I have in my life.
Yeah.
It just happened to be this, and maybe it'll morph into something else. I don't know.
But I'm trying to do is, and I've realized, and this goes back to my question of like not, or I guess me mentioning people taking too much of a bite at something.
Sure.
So, cause I think that's what a lot of people do is like they want to do a big change, but it's realistically, it's a little bit too big than you can handle. So you have to kind of like incrementally, I can't even talk English right now.
Yep.
Kind of like
do it in chunks.
Yes. Build yourself up. Even if I could talk, I would have got that word out. So work yourself up in chunks. So for me, it's like, you know, I'm just minimizing the amount that I drink. And then eventually I really do want to just drop it off.
Yeah.
Right now it's just about minimizing. And I'm like, you know what? I think in the last, what's the date today?
Today's the 23rd.
So the 23rd. So it was almost a month ago. And I've maybe had like four nights that I've had something to drink, and not like what I used to, because I used to like pound, like you'd be having fun and I like rum. Yeah, so sure. I drink half a bottle of rum in a night.
Right.
So I'm not doing that. I buy like a little thing of Colliding Tides or like some vodka soda drink, and then have a couple of those, and then that's it.
Yeah.
And then even if I feel shitty in the morning, normally I usually force myself to, because I'm like, you're an asshole. You put yourself in this situation.
Right.
You're going to suffer right now.
Sure.
And then at the end of that, I feel good. But but that's the kind of thing for me. And then eventually I will, sort of just shovel it out of there. But
one thing I found that was interesting too, after sharing it publicly, is the amount of people and friends that did reach out to me and were like, this, so proud of you. Or like, I just want to offer my support, and I think it's really cool what you're doing. I couldn't do it, but I'm really glad that you are. Yeah. People like, I had really nice messages like from Bernie, who would just message me every now and then, and just like, I'm so proud of you, man. Like, this is really good. And that really helped. And then having like the support of my parents and wife, it was just like, and I just saw myself progressing. It was just like, I'm just glad I made the change, and I honestly don't know if I'll ever do it again. Like, I keep saying that. It's like every day goes by, it's like, I made another day. It's like, I don't need to. And I also joined this, like, I don't know if you use Reddit or not, but there's like on the website, and there's a subreddit called Stop Drinking. And it's a support group globally for people who want to give it up, whether it's day one or people who've been, you know, fighting it for 17 years. So putting yourself in scenarios where you read positive reinforcement of why you're to, for the decision that you made to keep going. Because if you're in an environment where you stop drinking, but then you keep going out to bars with your friends or parties, like that temptation is so strong.
Yeah.
And so the, like I said, having the pandemic last, people are like, you never drank during a pandemic. That's insane. It's just like, well, I couldn't go anywhere. And it actually made it, it probably made it easier for me to give it up because I would just go out and drink.
Yeah. Okay, man. Well, fuck.
Yeah.
That was fun. That was insightful. I hope everybody enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I will definitely be talking more about this stuff as we go along. But yeah, that's kind of like the biggest goal for me this year is kind of like, and I hate making annual goals, but this month, usually January, especially over the last few years running the Live Life Intense business, it's been my month of like kind of trying to go into a cave and figure out what the grand scheme of thing is for the year. Like what are the goals as us as a business? And then now I've been kind of like, you know what? I'm just going to start making personal goals because you know, I've never done a budget. But I was doing like a little assessment of like the amount of money I spent in alcohol last year. And it's
shocking.
Yeah. So your pocketbook's probably a little heavier now, eh?
I just buy dive gear now.
Well, yeah. And I've been kind of, So I've been trying to justify buying better camera gear and film gear. And that's one way that I'm going to, that's kind of like one of the reasons.
That's awesome.
You know, I buy new stuff for,
man, non-alcoholic beer. There's a lot of more, there's a lot more choices out there now.
But that's the thing. I don't like,
if you're
I don't drink beer for the taste.
Oh, okay, okay.
I don't. No, that's not my angle. I've never enjoyed. I never drink beer for the taste. It's the booze. That's why I like hard alcohol.
You know that they sell non-alcoholic spirits for like $40 at the grocery store? That's gross. Never bought it. I'm never going to try
it. I'll buy non-alcoholic Bailey's.
But why would you? Yeah, but why would you buy a non-alcoholic gin?
Flavor, I guess.
Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know. Maybe you drank it. Maybe you're an old, you know, an old grandmother that usually drank it and drank quite a bit of it for years. You're, you know, a housewife all your life and you're like the, you know, always had money. And then, you know, something health happened and your doctor said you couldn't drink, but you like having that cold drink with your, you know, you get dressed up every day and you put on your makeup and you're all dolled up in high heels. Even though you don't leave the nursing home, you're in high heels and you're all dolled up and you need that drink. You need that taste. Just to remind you of those younger years.
I got to find a picture. I'll send it to you. Like me before and after a year of drinking and not. It's like, it's an astonishing. It's like one of those pictures you see on the internet of like before and after of a guy who's like fatter and then he like.
So you don't want this beer I got in this bag right now?
No, I'm good. I'm good, man. I like these bubblies.
I know. That's what I've been doing. I've been like slowly drinking through the whole menu. Cherry is my favorite.
Cherry's good. Grapefruit's pretty good. Lime is a basic one.
I know, but it sells out like crazy. It's
Blackberry's not bad.
We have, what was the one we did in the last podcast, was LaCroix coconut, which was okay. I mean, you know, it was good. It was wasn't something that like he said is his favorite one. So I bought it and I was like, I haven't tried it, but
it's crazy.
I would buy it again. It's not my favorite, but
these companies are making cash off just carbonating water. It's wild.
But these guys have flavored it like differently. I find bubbly flavor is completely different.
Yeah, versus doing it yourself through like a soda stream or
I've got four different soda stream things that are full. I have like eight canisters on top of my fridge.
You told me a story I often think about. You chug club soda to get the weird feeling.
Yeah, when you chug, yeah. So when you, I'll down this whole can in one go. Like chug it.
You know, I've tried doing that since you told me that story.
So this doesn't have the amount of carbonation I like. I can chug it and not even blink an eye.
Okay.
What you got to do is get the soda stream and you go a fresh new tank. And I have the electronic one with the three buttons up top.
Yeah.
Not the like one you hold down.
Oh,
but
yeah.
But you do the max and you just max it out. I mean, I'm wasting a lot of CO2, but I just max it out so it's the strongest. And if it's ice cold and it's super strong, you start chugging that. I can't get like two or three sips in and my eyes are watering. But yes.
Why do you like that feeling?
I don't know. I think it stems back to when I was a kid.
Okay.
I used to go down to the store, which was, it would be my dad's uncle. And McPherson's store, for anybody that knows, down near my parents' place, Marguerite. But they used to have like one of the old Coke coolers there with the glass bottles. And I used to get those and chug those and like be boiling hot out. And I just really like that. Like the glass bottle Coke,
snap it
off, and then it's ice cold and it's like 40 degrees out and you just chug it. And I kind of liked it. And then when I got older, I used to chug fountain pop was the best.
Yep.
Especially for hangovers, because you get a big fountain pop, you just kick that back and your like, eyes water and it's cold and you got, yep. You know, it'd help. And I found the carbonation really helps with nauseous stomach.
Sure.
Yep. Especially when I'm, it's kind of stems around drinking and partying and stuff, right?
Yeah, so it's all connected.
So this was like, I avoided doing cans forever. And then I bought bubbly when we were in BC. That's okay. Where it started. Oh, I flew to BC.
This is recent.
We were driving around. I didn't have my soda stream. So I bought a box of bubbly and they had cherry in the store. So I bought cherry and I got out in the car and I cracked it open and we're driving. I'm like, oh my God, this is really good. Now I know what everybody's talking about. And so then the whole trip, I was going through like 6-7 cans a day.
There's new variations now coming out from Superstore where they're making their own club soda, but they're doing it in pop flavor, ginger ale. And it's good. My brother bought some. It's like new.
Yeah.
And it tastes like a ginger ale.
Oh, President's Choice.
Yeah, none of the sugar.
Interesting.
And it tastes like ginger. It's unbelievable.
But, excuse me, but it doesn't have the aspartame.
No, it doesn't. That's the thing. They figured out how to get the flavor right.
That's, yeah.
Without
that,
aspartame.
That was the biggest downfall of, for me, for like any, that's why so my favorite drink is like rum and coke.
Yep.
And mostly now because it's Nova Scotia Spirit Co. rum.
Yep.
And glass bottle, cold Coca-Cola.
Yeah.
That's number one choice. And then after that, it's the cans. And then after that, it's like, I'll deal with the plastic.
The 2 liter.
But the plastic is like, but anyways, the real Coke is where it's at. I can't, not Pepsi, it has to be Coca-Cola.
You know what the best real Coke I've ever had? And this doesn't really do the podcast anymore. But it's like, I was in Haiti and had Coca-Cola from cane sugar from Haiti. As the best Coca-Cola I've ever had.
Yeah. Down there? Yes. In the Caribbean, all that sort of stuff. Yeah. It's amazing.
It is.
It's like that glass bottle. And when I used to go to school in PEI,
I
used to be able to get cases of glass bottles of pop. Man, that fridge is stocked full because I would just chug it and chug it. And I did like, this is making me sound like I chugged a lot. I didn't drink a lot of pop, but I was drinking a lot. Yep. So it was kind of like my hangover cure to drink sugar and all that stuff. And then kick back like another beer to, you know, flatten that curve a bit, and then usually we start all over again.
Yeah.
But anyways, but okay, we digress.
All right,
yeah,
that was good, man.
So so tell people how to get a hold of you or find you online.
Yeah, well, like I said in the podcast, Saltwater Sean is the name I came up with myself. Super easy. Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, but most importantly, YouTube. If you go to YouTube and search me up, you can actually see videos of my treasure hunting exploits all over the province, including one in Cape Breton in Dingwall. Didn't find anything that day, but still a ton of fun.
Dude, we're going to get it going.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll get you on this trip to that island I was talking about.
I would love to make a full... And I love making YouTube videos, too. That's another thing that's come out of it. Like, I like the Saltwater Sean treasure hunting, but I also love the process of making videos now.
It's a fun process.
It is. YouTube is an interesting medium.
Telling a story, and like I've been getting, usually, so over the years for our business, just shooting, there wasn't really any story behind it until we did the documentary we did last year. And then I was like, wow. Well, yeah, I'm loading it back up to color it again and fix some errors on it, and then I'm going to put it on YouTube, but for free. Sometime soon, hopefully before March. But it was more or less trying to figure out a story and storyboard stuff, which we did for the doc. But like even little videos we were shooting the last couple of weeks with my friend Jimmy. He's a fishing guy, but he's a wildlife photographer as well. So I've been following him on like, you know, his daily trips going out to find wildlife and like trying to create a story out of that and like piecing that together afterwards. So we try to meet up twice a week. Like Monday, we meet up Mondays and Wednesdays, and I follow him, and I film him, and we come up with a story, and I've been trying out new things, like as far as like new settings within the phone, or my camera, new techniques, like new transition, and just trying to think up that whole, I mean, this is trying to make, for me, I'm trying to make more of a kind of a movie feel,
I get
but
it.
With a simple activity of just going out to shoot like an eagle, which we did the other day next to my house, like literally just down the road from my
video
house.
Is where it's at. And storytelling is so much better than if you can do with video than a photo.
Yeah.
So that's, trying to grow YouTube so I can make money. That'd be really cool.
Okay, man, everybody. Yeah. Go follow Sean. Let's get him over that.
Subscribe. You need a Gmail account, which I think everyone in the world now has. So
basically. Yeah. Okay, cool. Awesome, man. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Cheers.